Experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived and it's just in time.
Let me tell you about the birds and the bees and the flowers and the trees. Hey, welcome back to AmericaTrendsPodcast.com. Wow. I'm in a very lyrical way today.
You got your head in the clouds there.
I do. And my feet need to touch the ground because I'm talking about love, baby.
Oh, boy.
We're talking love. Hey, remember we used to be disc jockeys, John? We used to talk this way. I'm Larry Rifkin, and John Krosick is with me
Elvis.
Once again. Elvis. AmericaTrendsPodcast.com. And there's a great book that has been updated for, I don't know, the second or third time. And it's Dr. David M. Buss, The Evolution of Desire, John.
Ooh.
Passion.
Ooh.
Men are from Venus, women are from Mars, Ooh. Or vice versa.
This is serious
whatever.
Business.
Well, you know, it really is. Strategies of Human Mating. Now, look, we're always looking forward here, and I think everybody's looking forward to the fact that with all the things that are changing in our society, that at least something remains, well, the same, but it doesn't. I'm talking about sexual desire and appetite and what brings us together as men, women, or maybe men and men, women and women. I mean, but this is fascinating, and this guy, Dr. Buss, is really respected in this field. This is not pornographic, John, in any way.
Oh, you're getting me nervous.
No,
sweat over here.
Everyone, you're sweating. Well, everyone can listen to this. Honest to goodness, this is the intellectual way of talking about sex.
Okay.
All right. It's not meant to be gratuitous. Or it's not meant to be a one-day stand. You can listen to this over and over and over
That's
again.
That's true. With the podcast, you can do that.
And, you know, it's interesting because there are changes in the evolution of desire. I mean, it may seem to be universal and it may seem to be static, but there's a lot about our relationships, the way we find each other, the way we look at relationships, one-night stands, what were they back in the 60s versus today. So there's a lot about our culture that continues to redefine what sexual relationships really are all about.
Wow, I guess I've been out of the loop for too long
here. I think you need to get back in the loop, John. But, you know, even the emotion of jealousy, there are many different things about the evolutionary psychology of human mating strategies. And Dr. Buss really has a wonderful way of communicating all of this. We talked to him several months ago, and again, we're recording this during the dog days of August, and we decided let's reach back into the archives and find certain things that we thought were really interesting when we did them at the time.
And they were.
And oh, absolutely.
And they are.
So Dr. Buss is going to be with us today. And believe it or not, he has done a study encompassing more than 10,000 people of all ages from 37 cultures worldwide. Now, he didn't get them into one big bed or anything, John. I can see your mind going, 10,000 people groping. No, that's not the way it went.
He missed the bus. I don't know, maybe we missed the bus.
Were you one of those 10,000 people, John?
No,
you weren't. Somehow you got left out of this study.
Thank goodness.
Well, they wanted to make it more interesting. But, I mean, he draws on all these incredible examples of mating behavior. And he even looks at love bugs. There are such things as love bugs, John.
Really?
Yeah.
I know there was Herbie the love bug.
Oh, was that a car?
Yeah.
Okay.
That was a Volkswagen.
And he looks at elephant seals. He looks at tribes from Venezuela. And, of course, one of the new things, and that's why he had to update this book, is the whole concept of online dating and the whole idea of how we go about looking for love and whether, in fact, the old ways that we did it, where you actually met a human being in your community versus searching the web. I mean, do you think that you can really develop? I mean, you've seen all of these ads for all these dating services. Do they strike you as being good ways to kind of determine who's in and who's out in terms of your thought process or no?
Well, I don't know. The whole idea kind of scares me a little bit. But, of course, there's a lot on the Internet that scares me a little bit. But actually trying to find people on the Internet, it kind of, I don't know. I just.
Now, have any of your children done it that way?
No, not that I'm aware of. Not that I'm aware of.
But I'm sure they've all been online and kind of assessing situations.
I mean,
and
maybe they've met somebody, you know, maybe through Facebook or something. I really don't know. But as far as I know, they haven't used any of these services.
Yeah. But a lot of people do, John, and they say that it works for them. Well, at least the ads suggest that. So I don't know. But, I mean, Dr. Buss is an older gentleman, as we are getting a little bit older. But he is open to a lot of new research about the evolution of desire. And I think it's something that, look, it's an important part of the human experience, right?
That's true.
To accept that. And, you know, I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, makes life more interesting.
That's for sure.
So why don't we make our podcast even more interesting?
All right.
And again, the revised and updated edition of The Evolution of Desire with all the latest information from all that research that he's done. And those who read this book, like myself in the past, really do find it to be very insightful. And there are some surprises. And we get into some questions that perhaps you would have had you been in the seat I was in while he was in the hot seat or the love seat or wherever he was.
Oh,
the love boat.
There you go.
You used to watch that,
that's
right?
That's another way to meet girls.
Yeah, except if you get seasick. And that could make for a very difficult first date when you're trying to look very interested. And basically you're ready to go overboard. It's just not a comfortable situation. Well, this is going to be very comfortable for you. And we hope you enjoy it here on AmericaTrendsPodcast.com.
Well, speaking of warmth and hot passion, the evolution of desire, strategies of human mating. You know, we have dealt over the years with a lot of issues related to human sexuality and the like. And I want to thank David Buss with his revised and updated edition of this book. And David, this is a classic. I mean, how many times have you updated it?
Well, this is the second major update. So, first time was, 11 years ago or so, actually a bit more.
And, yeah, 2003, I think. Yeah.
2003, yes. Yeah. So this is a major update. Basically, the field of human mating strategies has exploded in terms of the scientific evidence and what we know now. And so the book, The Evolution of Desire, just warranted a major update. And I'm hugely excited about it. They also created a wonderful cover for the book.
Yeah,
I think it's really apt.
It really is. Well, we'll let people get the book and then they can see it all. But what is it that we don't understand or don't even think about? I mean, we get into relationships and ultimately we get married and, you know, we can be right. We can be wrong about the attraction. It can go. It can come. It can stay. We just don't know. I mean, what kind of crapshoot is it? And can we understand more by reading your book or reading about love before we get so wildly emotionally entwined?
Yes. The answer is yes to those questions. Of course, I mean, nothing in life comes with a guarantee. And so things go wrong, you know. I mean, we do have a divorce rate in the United States of just under 50% or so. And I don't think that's necessarily bad, you know, in that, you know, you don't necessarily know when you're young who the right person is for you. And what the evolution of desire does is it provides a lot of information about basically all stages of the mating process. So one is tactics of attraction, so what you can do to attract the mates that you desire, and then also mate selection. The book actually has some really good recipes for who not to get involved with or who to get involved with, or if you get involved with people with certain characteristics such as high narcissism or high sensation seeking, you know, what are you in for? Or emotional instability, that's another killer. So we do know scientifically what characteristics of people are linked with high quality relationships over time. But then, you know, some relationships, the way I liken them, and this is a terrible analogy, but some relationships are only meant to last a few months or a few years, and some are meant to last a lifetime. And so there's no one recipe that is the key to success for everybody. And I think that in America, we've somehow gotten a bad rap if a relationship breaks up. I mean, sometimes you can have a great relationship for 5 years, and then you're just at a different stage in your life, especially with people who get involved very early in their life. I mean, people change, and so who's appropriate for you in high school or college may not be the same person who's appropriate for you in your 30s or 40s.
Oh, absolutely. You tell us that love, of course, has a central place in our psychology, but we also are prone to conflict, to competition, manipulation. I mean, when does one destroy, you know, the impact of the other? I mean, you're in a full embrace, but then all of a sudden, you know, these ruptures in the relationship begin. I mean, how hard is it to mend that, even if you still have a lot of emotion or love there, but you also have many conflicts? I mean, how do you resolve that? Or is it best at times to move on?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. And it really depends on the nature of the conflicts. So are we dealing with things like financial conflicts or sexual conflicts or infidelity? And also it depends highly on, you know, whether both members of the couple really want to stick it out and really want to mend things. Because often what happens by the time it gets to things like sexual infidelity, sometimes it's gotten to the point where one person has checked out of the relationship in some way psychologically. And in that case, I mean, if someone's checked out, it's really difficult to mend those. On the other hand, there are cases where there is like an indiscretion. We do have, I think, these unrealistic expectations. And so I think one of the things the book does is it says, hey, look, some levels of conflict are inevitable in relationships. I've never seen a single relationship that had zero conflict. Mm. I mean, maybe they exist, but they're extremely rare. So part of it is how we deal with the conflict when it comes up. You know, do we deal with it constructively in an emotionally mature way? You know, or do we say, okay, this is a conflict and I'm just going to bail right away? And some people do that. And sometimes it's appropriate to bail. You know, I think that, you know, when there's a major relationship violation, like a sexual infidelity or an emotional infidelity or even a financial infidelity, sometimes that really ruptures the trust in relationships. And so that trust is really difficult to gain back, but some couples manage to do it. But it requires a lot of change. So part of the book in The Evolution of Desire, I also talk about the end stages of relationships. So how to get out of relationships, how to getting back out on a mating market. And often it's a new mating market. I mean, now we have the proliferation of internet dating sites in a way that even we didn't 3-4 years ago.
Well, you said that the science surrounding a lot of this really has changed since you first published in 1994. So here we are many years on, and so has the technology. Do you think that they, as you read about them, Match.com and others, have they really figured out anything about the algorithms of love that you think are reliable indicators that folks can be more compatible? What do you think about the science related to this?
Well, okay, so the internet dating sites like Match and like eHarmony and others, the algorithms by which they create the matches are typically not public information. And so I don't have access to them. What we do know is we know scientifically what characteristics lead to stable relationships and what characteristics lead to, for example, predict infidelity in relationships and are more likely to lead to breakups. And so I think that the information contained in the book, if then can be used on the internet dating sites to look for and screen potential mates. So, you know, the empirical science on which dating sites are effective and which are not, it's still up in the air right now.
What are the okay, go on. Yeah. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say it is true that something like 44% of people do find their mates, girlfriends, boyfriends, marriage partners online nowadays. So it's here to stay.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. What do you think has been the major scientific breakthrough in terms of looking at this process and, you know, taking the kind of, you know, giggly part of it out and really getting analytical about the evolution of desire? What do you think we've really come a long way in understanding that perhaps in 1994 was almost unthinkable?
It's hard to pinpoint one exactly, but I'll mention maybe two that I think have really mushroomed. One is a much deeper understanding of women's sexual psychology. We just didn't know in 94 there were relatively few studies on women's sexuality. And women's sexuality turns out to be far more interesting and far more complicated than anyone realized. Now, anyone could have told you that, but I think that we know a lot now about female sexual psychology. So that's one of the major revisions in the book, is highlighting what we know scientifically about women's sexuality, and including their urge for short-term mating and the context in which they do short-term mating and the context in which they are motivated to have affairs, even if they're in a long-term relationship. One of the things I talk about is what I call the mate switching hypothesis, where women use affairs sometimes to get out of a bad relationship, to switch into a better relationship, or even sometimes just to put her big toe in the water to see if maybe there's a better, more compatible mate for her out there. Men, in contrast, men sometimes do that, but men who have affairs are more likely to have affairs just for the sake of sexual variety. So the purely sexual motivations are more characteristic of men when it comes to affairs, whereas women, you know, have this more complicated psychology of mate switching, of backup mates, of looking to see whether someone in the mating market might be a better suitable for her.
You said there might be another, or that was one, or were those the two twinned together?
There's that, and then there's also a much larger section in the book on what I call serial mating. So some people, one of the questions I get asked a lot is, are humans fundamentally monogamous, or are we polygamous? And I think that statement is not accurately phrased, and the answer is we're both. We have a menu of mating strategies, and which strategy we adopt depends highly on our personal mate value, on the sex ratio in the mating pool, on whether we live in a large city or an urban area. And mate switching and serial mating is pretty common. Okay, and so what that means is that we have to have adaptations, and I describe what these are, for getting out of relationships, for trying to minimize the cost in the aftermath of a breakup, for getting back into the mating market, and then for remating over the lifespan. So, are there people who find the one and only at age 18 and marry for 75 years till death do them they part? Yeah, there are some, but it's a minority. Most of us do serial mating, and I don't think that's a bad thing. It's just part of who we are for the reasons I described before.
Well, let's go into the popular lexicon. There was a movie, Friends with Benefits, and you asked the question talk about it in the book, can men and women be just friends? Or what about this notion of friends with benefits?
Yes. Well, it's I think part of it's interesting that you mentioned the lexicon, and the lexicon has changed over time. So when I first wrote The Evolution of Desire, the term hookup culture and friends with benefits, those terms weren't in the lexicon. However, I think people engaged in sexual behavior that is, in essence, the same thing. We just have new labels for it. But I do think that there has been a shift in particular a shift in women's sexuality, where in modern cultures, and I see this especially on college campuses, women feel more comfortable engaging in casual sex, in friends with benefits, in hookups. But on the can men and women be just friends, what our research finds is a really interesting answer to that question. It partly depends on whether you're a man or a woman. Men have more difficulty being just friends because men are more likely to become attracted sexually or romantically to their female friends. And if that attraction is not reciprocated, if she doesn't like him back, then it's more likely to create conflict and end the relationship. So can men and women be just friends? Of course they can. Under some men and women, under some circumstances, men just find it more difficult for the reason that I mentioned.
Well, I've got to tell you, David Buss is a real researcher and educator from the University of Texas. That's who you're listening to, and conducting one of the largest studies of human mating ever undertaken. 10,000 people of all ages from 37 cultures. How different are we in America than some other cultures? Or are there cultures that we mirror in terms of sexuality and mating?
Yeah. Well, there are some universals. So in long-term mating, I mean, we're all, and this is contradicts some social science wisdom, but we all look for mates. We all look for love, and that's true in every culture. Even in cultures with arranged marriages, love is very important. And so we all want mates who are kind and understanding and intelligent and healthy and all that. There is some cultural variability, though, and we've seen that within the United States, changes over time within our culture, but also across cultures. And one of the most variable qualities is the importance placed on virginity or chastity. Mm. There's no prior sexual intercourse. And so if you go in America back in the 1930s and 40s and 50s, it was really important to be a virgin, especially for women at marriage, but that's decreased substantially. So I've tracked changes in mate preferences over time within our culture, and then these also show tremendous cultural variability. So if you go to, for example, some of the Arab cultures, historically Chinese as well, even Ireland to some degree, place much more emphasis on virginity and chastity than those in say Western Europe or the United States. But even here, and this is another interesting thing, even in the United States we see some regional variations.
Hmm.
So people in the South, for example, prioritize virginity somewhat more than people in the North or on the coast. So it's interesting that that there's that. And then I guess another thing has to do with the age. There's been a really interesting shift in the age at which people get married. And it used to be people got married in America in the early 20s. And that almost seems crazy from my perspective anyway, because, I mean, I teach college kids, and they seem really young. They seem much too young to get married. And so now the average age of first marriage is more like 26 for women and 28 for men. And so there's been a gradual shift toward later ages of marriage, you know, and I think actually that's probably a good thing.
Well,
I mean, how can you know when you're 20 years old who you should be with?
Absolutely. What about children when they enter into the picture and you've had this wonderful relationship and it's all been built on a lot of emotion and a lot of sexuality, and then all of a sudden you got to get down to business, your parents? How does that change the evolution of desire between men and women?
Oh, that's a great question, and I do talk about that. I have a section on the impact of a baby on the relationship, and there's sort of there's a general trend, and then there's some interesting context that you have to take into account when making that generalization. So the general trend is actually not a happy one. So as a general rule, introducing a baby causes a decrease in satisfaction with the relationship. And in some sense, that sounds kind of obvious, and in some sense it is, because, you know, you just don't have time. All the attention is focused on the baby. The parents are worn out. In the modern world, in contrast to the ancestral world, we live without extended kin around, typically, to help. I mean, we live in these weird, isolated nuclear families where all the burden typically is placed on both parents, in some cases on one parent. In ancestral times, we had kin around to help, and that mitigates things. But the interesting thing is that life satisfaction does not go down. So even though the relationship takes a temporary dip in satisfaction with the birth of the baby, life satisfaction does not take a dip, because there's something gloriously, deeply psychologically meaningful about bringing new life into the world and raising that new life. And so one has to be somewhat differentiated. And also it depends heavily on the economic circumstances of the couple. So if the couple's just getting by and so they're under financial stress on top of it, that poses a huge burden and has a much more negative impact on the relationship. Whereas couples who are financially in good shape and then can hire help, let's say, for example, it's very common for both women and men, both parents, to work, if they can hire help to give them some relief so that they both don't have to sacrifice their careers, that seems to help. So being financially solvent seems to mitigate some of those negative impacts of a kid on relationship satisfaction.
In closing, what would you say about the status of monogamous, committed relationships in a culture that is complicated, that has so much information coming in, so many temptations, so many distractions? What would you say about the status of the monogamous, committed relationship in America today?
Oh, boy, you are full of good questions. That is also a great question. Well, you know, there are individual differences here. I think, you know, one of the things that we're seeing today is a kind of proliferation of alternative lifestyles. And so one of the ones that you hear a lot about these days is polyamory, open marriages, and so forth. I'm personally a little skeptical of that, simply because while it might fulfill some desires, those kinds of open relationships typically end badly, and they often occur because couples aren't really all that committed to each other to start with, so there's a high breakup rate among those. I think that I almost want to say that there are good prospects for monogamy within relationships. I think that if relationships go bad, then ideally there are good ways and bad ways to get out of it. So ideally you don't want to, you know, leave death and destruction in your path. I mean, sometimes it's just time to move on. As I mentioned earlier, I don't think there's anything wrong with serial mating. I don't think there's anything wrong with a mate being perfectly good for a period of time. And then people change, you grow up, you mature, you change, and sometimes you need a new mate, and that's just the way it is. And so I think that we are brought up sometimes with these ideals of that we are going to find the one and only at age 18 and live the next 75 years in total marital bliss. I think that's kind of naive, even though there are some couples that manage to do it.
All right. Well, the evolution of desire, strategies of human mating. David Buss, a classic revised and updated once again. It was in 2003 and now again in 2016, 2017. And I want to thank you so much for coming by today.
Thank you. It's been great chatting with you.
Absolutely.
If you like this episode, please leave us a kind rating or review. I'm on my hands and knees. Please do it on iTunes, because your review is really critical for us to continue providing this podcast. And John, I know that iTunes looks at this. They want to make certain that we have some rankings, some visibility, and that we're getting some traffic, and then they give you better positioning.
Absolutely. And this way, it'll put us in the forefront so you can find us much easier on your iPhone or Android, whatever you may be using.
And they may even send you out an alert. So please, if you can, don't miss a single episode of America Trends Podcast. And, John, they can subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher.com.
And also subscribe on our website.
Oh, absolutely.
We send out a little blurb, and we can also take your emails there at newsletter@rifkinradio.com. That's another way to get us.
And we do not sell or share
no
our
spamming,
lists.
Nothing.
Well, I don't know. Does anybody want our lists? I don't know, but we don't do it.
Good question.
Even if they asked us.
Even
nobody's
if they
asked us. But.
Right.
And when you do subscribe, let us know on Facebook and Twitter. We're getting very active on Facebook and Twitter. Our handle on both platforms. And John, this is really easy. At Trends Podcast. That's it.
That's real easy.
You like that? Did
yeah,
you get that?
I got that.
Okay.
I'm going to have to check it out
quiz.
Now. I'm going to have to tweet it.
We want to thank you, of course, personally for subscribing. And we also would like to get some of your ideas and questions for future episodes of America Trends Podcast. And that's important, too, because we're all over the map. Our interest editorially in the future, John, has no bounds. But we want to know what it is that you'd like to hear from us, if there was a segment that you'd like to see us follow up on, or if there's something in depth that you'd like us to deal with. Please let us know that,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, we're looking at the future. There's so much we can look at.
Yeah, and the topics that we've dealt with, I mean, we have gotten such incredible guests over the recent period, but they're only going to come to us if they know we've got an engaged and interactive audience.
Absolutely.
So it's really important that you become part of this podcast in so many different ways that we're sharing with you today.
You're absolutely right. We need your support and your help and your reviews.
And your ideas.
And ideas.
Or questions on Facebook and Twitter. And by the way, you can direct message us at Trends Podcast or using the hashtag Trends Podcast. You can also add an email address if you have a public one that you'd like us to give out.
Yeah, good. And you know what? You know what? We didn't mention Amazon.
Oh, yes. We have an Amazon store.
Yes.
And so if you go up, you don't have to buy the things that might be highlighted at that particular time. You can buy any book, and there's some benefit that comes back
just
to us.
Just put what you're looking at in the little search engine block there, and it'll take you right to Amazon, and it'll help us out.
Absolutely. And it doesn't really cost you anything more because they have built that into their pricing structure. So we get a little taste and you get more programming like this and you get the item that you were looking for. So it works
Absolutely.
For all of us.
It's a win-win.
Absolutely. Win-win-win.
Win-win-win.
So for more information on America Trends and for the latest updates on upcoming episodes, be sure to like our page on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. You can find us at Trends Podcast. And again, you can find John and I here in our studio performing as best we can for you.
That's right. And let us out.
What's that?
Let
We're
us
not
out.
Gonna let us out. No one is. Hey, listen, thank you so much for joining us today on America Trends. We'll see you next time.
We hope to hear from you soon.
Oh, by the way, we are posting all the time, and we're posting on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Good point.
So just be aware, if you're looking for new episodes, they're coming on Tuesdays and Thursdays. When you wake up, before you go out on your jog or your walk and you want to take us with you, we'll be there for you.
Very good.
All right. Have a great day.